from the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Talk about your health, wealth, and well-being on OneRadioNetwork.com. Once again, here's Patrick.
Once again, here's Patrick. And here we are, the 3rd of May, 2018. Open phones tomorrow. We are electrical beings. You all know that, right? We got these little our little cells are doing this and that and this and that and this and that. Long ago, we met Dave Stetzer. Somehow, ran into him via telephone. He's up in Wisconsin. Stetzer Electric is his website. He's got quite a bit of history with looking at electricity and the effects on the body. And he did a lot of great work and still does in looking at the what they call stray voltage. And the cows up in there, Wisconsin, and the how it affected the cows and the milk production and all kinds of stuff. Dave, good morning. You there?
Yes, I'm here. Good morning to you.
Nice to talk to you. What's up with you?
Oh, I'm getting ready to go on a trip to New Jersey.
What's going on up in New Jersey?
Dr. Klinghart is having a seminar out there, and I'm one of the speakers, and I have to go out there for Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Oh, cool. Yeah, we love Dr. Klinghart. Yeah, he's great. I'm getting a little echo here. Are you hear that?
No? I don't know.
No, okay. We're fine. So you just got back. What are you going to talk to Dr. Klinghart about at his get-together? What are you going to talk about?
Well, Dr. Klinghart's well-known
for
Lyme's disease, I think, treating that. But he doesn't like to treat people unless they clean up their electrical environment first because the pills or whatever he gives them as treatment.
Can you speak up a little bit, Dave? Or not?
Sure.
Yeah,
no. His pills or whatever his treatment process is, it doesn't seem to be as effective when your immune system isn't working the way it should, and you need a clean electrical environment for that.
And what kind of things are you going to be speaking to them about?
Well, as you know, years ago, we developed some filters that takes off the high-frequency transients off the building's wires. So some people call it dirty power, but it's we wrote a white paper on it, Dr. Martin Graham from UC Berkeley, and he called it electrical pollution. So somewhere along the line, it evolved into dirty power.
And this is just the juice or the energy that comes from the wires that are running through the walls in your home, right?
That's correct. What happened is, and I've said this before, in 1972, there was an oil embargo, so we had to get more energy efficient. So what happened is we started developing energy efficient lighting, variable speed frequency drives, things like that. And then the vacuum tubes were kind of gone, and we had solid state coming in. So all electronic equipment runs on DC current, so we have to change the AC to DC. So when we do, we used to use vacuum tubes. Now we use or solid state devices or switch mode power supplies. And so what happens is it starts chopping up this AC sine wave, and it creates all kinds of high frequencies. Like if you go to your light switch and you turn the light switch on in your living room or something, and you turn it on real slow, you hear that little bzzz noise just before it makes contact.
Yep, yeah.
Well, yeah, it's sort of like that. And like a computer switch, it's, well, 50,000 times per second or 25,000 times per second, depending on the brand. But so that puts all these high frequencies go back on the line. And, of course, now we have smart meters, you know, that transmit through space. Well, the transmitter runs on DC current. So in the smart meter that they come along and put on your home, or even if you don't, if you can opt out, lucky if you can, but if you can't, but even if you can, the neighbor puts one on, that 50 kilohertz that it puts on to change the AC to DC gets on everybody in the neighborhood's line, gets back on the grid.
I know you told us that. It's amazing that happens.
And it's you know, it has an effect on people. The most biologically active frequencies are between 4 kilohertz and 100 kilohertz, according to the World Health Organization, Russian government, Japanese government. And so, you know, at 50 kilohertz, right in that middle band.
Yeah, that's what we have. And I guess in Europe they have 60?
Well, 50 kilohertz.
Oh.
You know, no, that's what the DC, you know, we're switching to change the AC to DC, so the smart meters will put 50 kilohertz back. Not hertz. Europe has 50 hertz. 50. That's a long ways from kilohertz. But
yeah.
The hertz probably doesn't want to go into your body or into your
So Dave invented, along with his fellow Graham, he was out in California, right?
Yes. He was a professor emeritus from UC Berkeley. He has over 40 patents to his name. High-speed internet. He was an absolute genius. And together we did this, I think it was like the late 90s we first met, and then we were working on cows, and I switched over to people. So he said, well, if you help me with the cows, I'll help you with the people. So I switched back to cows for a while.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah, and you actually found that this, you created these little filters that you have on your website, Stetzer Electric, that you can plug in your wall and get this dirty electricity or this high-frequency stuff down where it doesn't affect the body as much, right?
Yes. Any energy above 2 kilohertz dissipates internal to the human body. So we made these filters that will work real well starting at 2 kilohertz, and it goes out way beyond over 100 and some 50 kilohertz. And we don't see anything on the line more than 150 anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, more than 100 actually. But so, and there were industrial filters already available that would start at 100. So, but there was nothing in between, you know, in the most biologically active frequency range. So we put those in, we experimented with them. There's been all kinds of research done, published in medical peer-reviewed medical journals, independent research of us. Professor Magda Havas has done a lot. Professor Sam Milham, world famous epidemiologist out in Washington State, former head of the Washington Health Department. They've done a lot of independent research, and in fact, I'm going to talk about numbers when I'm at Klinghart's. Because if you say you have a headache and we plug a filter in and the headache goes away, only you know you had the headache. But like blood sugar will change. There's been research with blood sugar. When they put this in, nobody had less than a 52% reduction in insulin usage. So within 20 minutes to an hour, your blood sugar will change. pH in your saliva will change within about 2 hours. Neurotransmitters, I think that was one of the last ones that was done by Milham. They checked 12 people's urine for 12 weeks at the Olympia Washington Library. And nobody had less than 300 neurotransmitters in their urine. And you don't want to have any in your urine because it's the communication system for your, it's like the electrical grid of your immune system. So if you stick your finger on a hot plate, you get a blister, there's a signal goes up and say, first of all, oh, you got to pull it off, you know, there's a reaction there and everything, so the reaction might be a little slower, or you don't get the blister down there as fast to cool it off, so your immune system doesn't work very good. So anyway, nobody had less than 300 neurotransmitters in their urine, then they put the filters in, and then within 8 hours, nobody had more than 3 neurotransmitters in their urine for the next 12 weeks.
And that's what these little filters are, very inexpensive, and they don't wear out. You just plug them in and get your levels down and just let them, just never think about it again.
Yeah, right. It's not like a oil filter or an air filter or something that plugs or clogs up or something like that. It's basically just a capacitor. A capacitor is a short to high frequency, so we take the high frequencies that are riding on the building's wires and we just short them out. They don't exist anymore.
What are they doing in their first place? What are they doing there?
The high frequencies?
Yeah.
Just
what they do, no?
Yeah. What happens is when we, like I said, that light switch, the example, turn it on, that little bzzz, this little arcing noise.
Yeah.
Okay, well, those little arcs or those little, when we're turning things on and off real fast, or we're chopping up the sine wave, then what happens is we get these transients. They're called high frequency transients. And if you remember in the old days when, and for us, it's not old days, but anyway, when they first came out with computers, and your computer never worked very long, you had to take it to the repairman, and he'd say, oh, yeah, there was a spike that came in and wrecked your components here. Well, that spike, it was really, the definition of that is really a transient. It's a high-frequency transient. So then they've actually, the Computer Business and Manufacturers Association said, well, look, you're going to have to make these components a little bit more stronger, a little more robust, you know, to go ahead and withstand these transients for a certain length of time, a certain amplitude for a certain length of time. So they did redesign stuff, so that's why you don't see it so much anymore. But, you know, I think only God can redesign a human, and I don't think he did that yet. So
working on it.
People are still, affected by it. We didn't evolve with these frequencies that we're being exposed to now. You know, I mean, from the beginning of time, we never had these frequencies like this. And so we didn't evolve, you know, to be able to accept this. So it's a stress on our bodies.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. What's the difference between, say, how the dirty electricity with the wires through our homes, which your filters can kind of remedy, and say with Wi-Fi's or cell phone towers, is it similar effect on the body?
Yes, there's something called radio wave sickness. Okay, they both have, and you can look at up the symptoms: headaches, nausea, heart palpitations, all these things. Okay, and actually, if you look them up and you look up the symptoms of these modern day diseases, that there's no known cause or cure, like chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, ADD, ADHD, those symptoms overlap. And what happens is, at the end of World War II, radar was developed. And so the Russians noticed that people had these symptoms, so that's how they got to be called radio wave sickness. But it's the same symptoms as these made-up diseases of the 80s and 90s. And so what happens is, well, Dr. Robert O. Becker, who was twice nominated for a Nobel Prize, said, look, we're now being exposed to frequencies we've never been exposed to before. And he said it is the cause of these made-up diseases, and he named those diseases. So it's called radio wave sickness. You can look it up. But Wi-Fi is energy that's coming through space. It's a higher frequency, but, yes, it will cause those same symptoms. Cell towers, cell phones, things like that. So you should really limit your exposure to that. Like, you know, the Russians say 10 microwatts per meter squared may be acceptable. Mm-hmm. Okay, they don't say it's safe. They say it may be acceptable. Well, if you're 10 feet away from your Wi-Fi router or your computer when you are working on it, you're going to get 2,000 microwatts per meter squared.
2,000 microwatts per meter squared.
Exactly. So maybe we're off by a little, you know, five plus or, you know, usually in tolerances like electronic components, they'll say plus or minus 10% or 5% or something like that, right? So, and they're saying 10 may be acceptable. So, you know, but they're not off 200%, see?
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah. 10 microwatts per meter squared is what the Russians say is acceptable exposure.
Maybe.
Maybe.
They don't say it's safe, and they don't say it is acceptable.
And if you have a cell phone tower, say, within a mile from you, what would the reading be? Anyhow?
Well, it could be higher than that, absolutely. It depends on the, you know, position of the antenna and things.
Sure.
And, you know, if are you inside the house, outside the house? And it's kind of an expense. Well, it's like $300 to get a meter to measure that.
Mm-hmm.
And so the average person doesn't have one, you know.
Sure.
So you really don't notice it, and you don't really feel it like you're, you know, you go out in the sun, you feel the sun shining, you know, or something like that. It's hot. You don't really feel, you know, that. So you know that you tie it, make that connection, you know.
Right. Okay, stay right there. We have a lot to talk about this morning. We have some good emails coming in, and you can join the email crowd, patrick@oneradionetwork.com, or you can call 888-663-6386, 888-663-6386. Dave Stetzer is here. He knows a lot of stuff we're going to talk about, all kinds of different things. He went up to Niagara Falls and had a pretty interesting experience regarding wind turbines. I'm going to ask him about, so stay right there. You'll enjoy it. Previously, with research scientists at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, PhD, and the curious connections between these glyphosates, Roundup, GMOs, and sulfur.
So if you simply put the glyphosate in place of the glycine in the sulfur transferase, you will not be able to get the sulfate from the cholesterol sulfate to some other molecule, such as the heparin sulfate. The cell won't be able to defend itself with sulfate if it can't put the sulfate there. But it's really, really important to be able to do that because, for example, cholesterol sulfate, it delivers sulfate to the cells. But in order to deliver it, you've got to take the sulfate off of the cholesterol and put it on something else. And that's what where the sulfur transferase would come in and wouldn't be able to do that.
I know, gets a little geeky, but the point is that without the proper amount of sulfur in the body, and now it's being disrupted because of the GMOs, even more than what it was already doing, it's not good. So we think that this sulfur product that we've been promoting is really helping people to keep everything kind of working well, because this whole sulfur cycle is kind of God's way of keeping the bad guys out and exiting the body. And because our sulfur is absolutely pure with no additives, it's different from almost all the other ones out there. You can click an order, three prices, right on our website, oneradionetwork.com. Previously, we talked with Brandon Amalani about his Blue Shield product to protect against EMFs in your home.
The more connected we are, the more electromagnetic radiation we're going to have. So years ago, I'd play with Q-Links and just anything I can get my hands on that, whether I felt it working or not, I just wanted some kind of leverage against electromagnetic radiation and those frequencies and how they affect the cellular biology. But then when I met Mark and started really getting deep to his technology and really looking at the microprocessing technology, I've never found any EMF company that would not only to test on not only human blood and urine analysis, but also on animals, which totally weeds out the idea of placebo effect. I mean, the fact that you can plug these devices into a chicken farm, a factory farm, for about 15,000 laying hens, and all of a sudden the mortality rate, which is averages from 60 to 150 deaths per month, goes down to zero. I mean, it's pretty profound that a little device, a little energy device, could actually like create such a harmony and balance within the environment to where claustrophobic chickens that are crammed in together actually get along better and actually feel better. The biological markers are improved over that 1 year study.
There's quite a bit of science with this Blue Shield product. You can see the ad on the front page. Promo code One Radio will get you a 10% discount. This works on the cells in the body. Very cool technology. Front page, Blue Shield, OneRadioNetwork.com. And as Brandon says, it doesn't to block any of that, but it works on the cells in the body. We have the system in. I've had it for about 4 or 5 months now. I'm not suggesting that I'm able to leap tall buildings in a single bound. And frankly, I was pretty well protected out here anyway with my Stetzer filters. And also, we don't even get cell phone reception in my home. So I was pretty jazzed as well. But overall, I keep getting healthier and better. So I got to believe these things do what they say. And they got a lot of science. This company's been, they're out of Australia. They've been researching this product, Blue Shield, for a long, long time, I think 20 years. So if you'd like to learn more about it, go to Blue Shield on the front page of One Radio Network. You can call Brandon, order from Brandon, and or email him and see if you might want to try it. They also have little dealies that I carry with me all the time when I leave. It's like a credit card, and you just turn it on. You jazz it up through a USB thing with a computer, and it'll help do the same thing when you're driving around with all the cell phone towers. So it's pretty cool technology. It is Blue Shield, and it's right on the front page of OneRadioNetwork.com.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
It's the good life. Full of fun seems to be the ideal. Yes, the good life lets you hide all the sadness you feel.
We're talking with Dave Stetzer. Probably has got one of the longest track records of studying this whole electromagnetic stuff and electricity in the home. And years ago, Dave, you found that this, what they call stray voltage, that comes. You know what, Dave? Can I do something? I should have done it before the commercial. This is really hard for me. Can I ask you to call me back from your landline?
Sure. Give me a number.
Yeah, I want to see if we can get a better line because I'm getting some distraction here. 512-858-4790. 512-858-4790.
Sure. Thank you. Be right back.
Okay. I'll talk about you when you're gone. So Dave and some people figured out that this stray voltage that was going back, and that's how they get the voltage back to the grid, is through the ground, right? And they call it stray voltage, but Dave says they know exactly what they're doing. How's that?
I'm here.
Does it sound any better, different to you, or different, better?
Sounds a little different, yeah.
Does it? Yeah, I think the echo is kind of gone. Good. I was just telling folks about what they call stray voltage and the work you did with the cows. It was just pretty amazing.
Yes. First of all, voltage doesn't stray. it goes where people put it. And the reason they called it stray voltage is because it was a term made up by the electric utilities and the public service commissions of most states. Because if you get bit by a stray dog, who's responsible for it? You know, and then it kind of leaves this, well, it's stray, so
it's
who
stray,
is responsible
yeah.
for it? Where if you get bit by a dog, you know, and it has a collar on it, and the guy's name is on it, and it's your neighbor's, and, you know, the dog's out, and there's rules that that govern that, I guess your neighbor's probably going to pay for the stitches. So what happens is these cows are exposed to these ground currents. The electric utility, remember I said back in 1972 when there was this oil embargo, so what happens is we started using current in a different manner. So we have a lot of extra current to create harmonic current. And these currents, we have, they call these loads now nonlinear loads instead of linear loads. And so there's extra current in the neutral wire. The neutral wire is the wire that takes the current back to the substation. And so by 1980s, it was so bad, you know, that there was the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers established standards. But one of the things they did is they made the electric utility the policeman of it. So it's like, Mr. Fox, can you come over and count the chickens in my hen house? So what happens is this neutral, by 1992, it was really bad. So the utilities lobbied the Public Service Commission to allow them to drive a ground rod on all the poles. So by 1998, 70% of all the current that goes out in the phase wires, the hot wires, returns to the substation via the earth.
Hmm.
Now, once you put it in the earth, right, it rides on top of the earth, not down in. And it flows uncontrolled over the earth. And so a lot of the farmers, they have bigger motors and more current will get off. They have lower resistance in the soil around the barns and places because of the manure and urine and things like that. So what happens is the cows, of course, they're barefoot, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And, they're standing on this in manure and things, right? So it's very conductive around there, and they were getting shocks.
Hmm.
And so we came along, and we just measured it. We can measure the voltage. I have thousands of cows on film where we put a camera behind the cows, and so they can't say stranger in the barn or something. And then we take the top one-third of the screen, and we put the electrical activity that the cow, is feeling. Because we bolt two plates to the floor, or we've actually shaved the cow's legs and put EKG patches on them.
Hmm.
And you can see the electrical activity on the top one-third of the screen, and then you'll see the cows react to these transients that come in. And it's like 10 millivolts, okay, you'll see a violent reaction on it. And we have films, and this is all published in peer-reviewed papers, and we can count we had software written so we can count how many times the cow got shocked in a day because we can log this data for long-term, and we've logged them for over a year. Some studies where we take five farms in a row or something in different parts of the states, different states even. So then we'd say, okay, let's count the transients and look at the cow's daily milk production. And there's a 99.9% correlation between daily milk production and the electrical activity that the cow felt on the floor.
Wow. That's
and
amazing.
It's published in peer-reviewed journals.
No. And so this could be going on probably all over the world.
No, not all over the world. It's going on in North America.
Oh, good.
Now, Europe, for example, uses a delta system, so they don't use the Earth as a return path.
Really?
Yes. What goes out on a wire has to return on a wire.
What goes out on a
wire? There are very few delta systems in the U.S.
Oh, so, wow.
We use what we call a grounded Y system. So that when we have this primary neutral wire, the wire that takes the current back to the substation, then what happens is you're not supposed to use the Earth, but as a part of the supply circuit. I mean, that's Rule 92D of the National Electrical Safety Code. But what happens is the utility does, and they drive a ground rod in every pole. So now these high frequencies, like they call it skin effect, they like surface area, and there isn't enough surface area in that wire. So the wire can't handle it. They should double the size of the wire or something. But instead, what they did is they put it in the ground. Well, now it falls uncontrolled over the ground. So there's no place in North America that I know of that you can go and stick two ground rods in the ground and take a reading between the two of them, not find a 60-cycle waveform.
Which is not healthy, right?
No, you can't run 60-cycle up one leg and down the other.
So much for going out in the... You know, walking barefoot in the on the earth, right?
Yeah, yeah. If you took an oscilloscope or a sensitive voltmeter and measure, you know, between it. Actually, we have taken like EKG patches and put it on people's ankles.
Yeah.
And then we can see them stand there, and you'll see the 60-cycle waveform. And you say, okay, spread your feet a little bit farther apart, and they do, and then the amplitude goes up because the voltage would go up. And you see it. It's as plain as day.
Do you think this is contributing to, you know, this all the illness epidemic in North America?
Well, I'm not credentialed to say that, but right. If you read Dr. Milam's books, and he says, you know, he's written, like, The Electrification of America and things, and, like, diabetes and things like that, he blames this on the disease of civilization, and he says it's the electrification of America.
So how does the electricity find its way back to the grid? I mean, it's not smart.
No, it's, well, it's like a hydraulic system in your tractor or something, and you push the lever and the hydraulic fluid is pumped under pressure. It goes out, goes through a hydraulic motor. And once it goes through the motor, okay, then the pressure, of course, there it's like forced or gravity or pushed back, okay? So it's sort of like that. If you remember your seventh grade science or something with the periodic table, and you have these, you know, the atom with the electrons, protons, and neutrons, okay? So there's an electron, the valence electron, and so when one leaves that atom, you created a hole there, so another electron has to fill that hole. So what happens is when the current goes out from the, like, substation or generating plant or wherever you want to call it, then one has to return, see?
Right. Okay. Yeah.
So,
similar to what happened.
Kirchhoff's law. I mean, the laws of physics. For every electron that leaves a node, one has to return.
Now, we've been told that the toxins, heavy metals, and chemicals, they go into the body and they steal an electron from the molecule in the cells. Would it be possible the EMFs are doing the same thing? Pretty geeky question.
No, I don't know. I have no clue.
Me neither. Yeah. I just thought I'd ask.
But current will actually flow in your body, and of course, we do have electrons. We're an atom, you know, right?
Yeah.
So, but the electrons will move in your body, and we don't want to see that. We can measure that, and if you have, you're sitting in front of a computer, you will actually the electrons start moving back and forth.
Oh, good.
In your body, and we can measure that, and then you can stand on a piece of aluminum foil and. But not when you're running the computer, but, you know, before you go to bed at night, you come home or whatever, and you will actually discharge. Take an Epsom salt bath, go for a walk on the beach, something like that, you will discharge.
Discharge it all. Yeah, you've taught us that, and to this day, I step on my little aluminum foil every night before bed. And I think of you.
Yeah, my wife has it underneath the bed. She just holds it out, steps on it, and puts it back.
So tell our listeners, we have a lot of new folks, what you're talking about here with the aluminum foil.
Well, what happens is your body builds this charge. And we did research in Russia, and we would measure these young girls, or they'd work on the computer, and they'd be at work by 9 o'clock, and in the morning, and they work till like 7, 8 o'clock at night. And so we would measure them before they would go home, and they would be like, say, 32 volts per meter or something like that. So then they would come back the next day, and they'd be like 28 volts per meter. They'd still be charged, but you could stand them on a piece of aluminum foil, goes away. You know, it takes about a minute, you know, and you actually, we can measure it, okay? So it's like the human body, if you made it into an electrical model, it's called the UL5 component model. If somebody wants to look it up, it's going to look like three resistors and two capacitors. A capacitor is a short to high frequencies, but a capacitor holds the charge, see? And so if anybody's ever played with capacitors, and before anybody works with them or touches them, they like to take a screwdriver and short the two leads together
right,
or something.
Yeah.
And you get this little, you know, little spark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's like the human body. So when you stand on the aluminum foil, it's like your legs are like the leads, and you don't get the arc, but, you know, you stand on it. And what happens is that you have the same amount of electrons on one side of your body as you do on the other. It equalizes them, I guess, or would be a good term.
And you stand on the aluminum foil.
For about a minute, you're totally discharged.
And it discharges all the stuff that you kind of gathered up during the day.
Yes, you're not, the electrons stop oscillating in your body.
And why wouldn't you want to do it like, say, here I'm in my studio, surrounded by all this equipment and two computers. Why wouldn't I do it here?
Because of capacitive coupling. And if you did it there and you're sitting on it or standing on it or whatever, that creates a very good conductive surface.
Oh.
And so actually you're like, here I am. You created this big satellite dish. Here I am. Come and get me.
Come and get me.
Yeah, come through me on the way to the tinfoil.
Which, Dave Stetzer, is the same argument that you have made about this grounding technology, right? That if I was grounded right now through a pad that's running out to the earth, you've argued that you can prove that that's not a good thing.
Right. The earth, I mean, would you take a wire and from a grounding mat and go up and climb up the electrical pole and hook it to that primary neutral wire? Not the hot wire, but the primary neutral, the current that goes back? Would you do that and then lay on it?
I don't know.
Well, that's exactly what you're doing when you plug it into that plug on the outlet, because that wire goes right out to that pole, right out to the transformer, right back to the primary neutral. And if you stick it in the earth, now, you can say, well, yeah, but there was all these people that got better and all this stuff. Look at where they did the research. Germany. Remember, Europe uses an open delta system, so they do not use the earth as part of the conductor. Everybody thinks these people aren't electrical people, okay, that make these. They're only in the business of making money.
Right.
And so what happens is, the earth is not at zero potential. You think the earth is like a sponge. And if we drop water on a sponge, we never see it again. It's just absorbed and that's it. That's not the case. The earth is like a brick, and we drop water on it. We got to deal with this water, okay? And we're putting all kinds of current into the earth. And it's not like a sponge where it gets absorbed. It's there, and it's looking for its way back to the substation. But it can go, it takes any and all paths. That's the laws of physics, okay? Kirchhoff's law. So then, what happens? If you're standing on the earth, you're part of that circuit. And if you go and stick a rod out in the ground, or you plug into that outlet, you know, the ground plug on the outlet, and then you lay on a conductive surface, you're going to get sick.
So, let me see if I understand. If I understand how, if you would plug in these grounding pads to the grid, that how that could get not good, right? I mean, it just makes, well, because of what you said, right?
Mm-hmm.
But so if you had an earth with no current, which they do in Germany, not here in the United States, and you did a grounding pad, you know, the wire all the way out, put it in the earth, a big copper thing, and you came up here in the studio and was grounded during my radio show, would that benefit me if there was no current in the earth? Or would I still become an antenna
You would discharge, okay? If you're charging up, you would discharge. But you don't need to connect it to the earth. When they got all these good results from these, you know, people, you know, earthing, they called it.
Right.
It doesn't matter if they were connected to the earth or not. What they were doing is laying on a conductive surface. Is it good to discharge? The answer is yes. Okay?
Right.
So basically all they did is discharge. You're taking those two leads and twisting them together and you can't charge. Okay? So on a, like a capacitor. So if you're standing on the aluminum foil, you discharge. Or if you're laying on a $150 grounding mat or whatever it cost, you know, I've seen them for more than that, but the cheapest one I've seen is like $150.
Mm-hmm.
You lay on this $150 grounding mat, right? And if you take, if you were going to discharge, as long as you don't plug it in, but if you plug it into the ground, you're going to charge back up again. Now, in Europe, you just won't charge again. That's simple as that. I mean,
well,
you're not connected to a live wire.
Isn't that a good thing that you would be standing on the grounding mat and be discharging the whole time you're standing on it?
Sure, but it only takes a minute. I haven't seen anybody. We got the Russians have a meter called the B&E meter, and they can. It's like $5,000. I got two of them, and we bought them because I had to have that. I'd never seen anything like, you know, to measure it before like that. And so we can actually measure it. And Professor Magda Havis has got one now, and Professor Sam Milham has one.
Mm-hmm.
So we can measure, you know, the body. Okay. And we can see these oscillations, okay, on a meter.
In the body.
You stand on the current, on some conductive surface, okay, I'm just saying tinfoil because that's cheap, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stand on this conductive surface, okay, I never seen anybody hold the charge more than a minute. I mean, you could see it go right down.
Right.
So if you stand on it for more than a minute, you're discharged. And then you would have to go back and work on a computer or go back and work with in front of all this electronic equipment or go back and sit underneath fluorescent lighting or something in order to charge up again.
Well, what if you were in an environment where you got out the fluorescent lighting, the wires and all the cell phone towers down the street, so you got all the juice coming in, assaulting your body, and you're on the grounding mat. It still doesn't work, right? It's not benefiting you.
No. It's good to discharge. If you're charged up, you want to discharge.
Right.
You got all this stuff in your environment, then don't stand on it. And when it's because then you get a better path to charge up more.
So you're
charged
up. You don't
want to stand on it. Yeah, you don't want to stand on the aluminum foil when you're standing underneath LED lighting or HID lighting or some sort of fluorescent tubes. You know.
And it's the same thing for the grounding mat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you go on YouTube and you see all these people that have this little voltmeter, and they're showing you when they get grounded, it goes...
That's a scam.
What?
That body voltage meter is a scam. All you're doing is measuring the voltage drop between two points, the voltage potential. I have a mannequin in my office,
mm-hmm.
In one of the rooms, and we put an EKG patch on, you know, or that we can connect this voltmeter to the... to measure the body voltage in the mannequin. And there's all kinds of body voltage in the mannequin. It isn't in the mannequin if you use that. All you're doing is measuring the voltage potential between two points, whether it be the outlet plug or a rod out in the earth somewhere. And so that's totally a scam. Don't buy them. You can't do that.
But, I've seen electricians using this thing. They weren't selling anything, but they were just showing you how... When you do get grounded, how it's better because the meter goes down
okay,
or something.
Okay, that's a good point.
Yeah.
But the voltage goes down. Let's use a kitchen sink, for example.
Okay.
If you go over to the kitchen sink and you had, let's say you could take a tea in there and you put a pressure gauge so you knew how much pressure was on that kitchen, you know, the water pressure there.
Mm-hmm.
And let's just say it's 40 pounds per square inch of pressure, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now you turn the sink, the water on. What do you see? You see the pressure gauge fall. Right?
Right.
But what happens? The water flow is increased. You understand?
Oh, so the meter
now,
that you're seeing, your pressure is going...
The meter that you're reading,
yeah.
This that you're seeing, is the voltmeter, not an amp meter. Don't confuse the two. The voltmeter measures, it's like the pressure gauge, okay? What's the pressure there? How much pressure is there to push these electrons through your body? Now you stand on a piece of aluminum foil or a grounding mat or something... And you're saying, oh wow, the voltage meter went down.
Yeah,
it did. The pressure gauge went down, but the amp flow, the current flow, increased. It's Ohm's law. We put men on the moon using Ohm's law. So now somebody comes along and wants to make a fast buck, so they sell you this body voltage meter, and they're not electrical engineers. They're not, they're, you know, they don't understand the theory of electricity. I mean, that'd be like me trying to go out and do brain surgery.
I think you'd be pretty good, probably.
Not really. I wouldn't want to.
We're talking to Dave Stetzer, StetzerElectric.com, Patrick Timpone, OneRadioNetwork.com. We have some good emails for you. Before we get to the emails, talk about what you discovered. You went up and met Magda Havas up in, was it Niagara Falls, and the wind turbines.
Oh, yes.
Talk about that experience. Yeah.
Sure. What happened was some time ago, they started putting wind turbines up in the Canadian province of Ontario, and they were putting a lot of them around the Niagara Falls area. And what they do is they pay these farmers $50,000 per wind turbine. And so, of course, that's a very comfortable retirement.
Or to put them on your property. Wow.
Yeah. $50,000 they'll pay you to set this wind turbine on your property.
Mm-hmm.
But then what happened is everybody started becoming ill.
Wow.
They can't live in their homes. They can't do any of this. Of course, the others say, oh, there's no problem with that. There's no problem with wind. Well, what happens with wind, okay, they call it green energy. And even here in the United States, what happens is it was mandated that so much of the power has to be to these utilities, which I feel sorry for them, because they were told, look, you got to buy so much green energy from solar or wind, okay? So they got to build these great big transmission lines across people's property, everything, to get wind from places like North Dakota to Madison, Wisconsin, or from, you know, places like that, right?
Right, yeah.
So what happens is everybody in these, where they put these wind turbines up, they get ill. And what happens is when the wind blows 5 miles an hour, we want to produce electricity. When the wind's blowing 30 miles an hour, we want to produce electricity. So the wind is not a constant thing, but we have to. And so what happens is we have to have a constant voltage to go back onto the grid, to get onto the grid. So what they do is when the wind is blowing 5 miles an hour, it's producing not a constant voltage, but it's producing some current. So if we take the current, that's AC current, and we turn it into DC current, and we charge a battery bank, then we'll have DC power, and a battery bank is a constant voltage. Then we take the DC, and we turn it back into AC, and then we can put it on the grid. Well, the problem is that when we turn it from AC to DC, we have to go through a switch mode power supply. It creates these high-frequency transients.
Hmm.
Then when we go through from DC to AC, we have to run it through an inverter, and that creates high-frequency transients, and it puts it out on the grid. So the power, and the IEEE, the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, has established standards where you can't put more than 1.5%, or depends on the voltage distortion on, and they're usually running 1.8 or more, and so the wind can't comply, really, with national and international standards, but they still put it on, and they have to, you know, the utilities have to buy a certain amount, and it's unreliable. And like in the case in Niagara Falls, they have this river that's running constantly. How much more green can you get than that river, you know? Exactly, and they turn that turbine, and from what I understand, that Niagara Falls is only producing 30% of what it's capable of, the generators, because they have to buy so much from wind, see? But everybody, in the meantime, everybody's getting sick. So I went up and took some measurements and collected data, and, you know, now some doctor or somewhere will say, yes, these frequencies cause X, Y, and Z.
And they're in the earth?
On the earth, yes.
On the earth, wow.
Yeah, running across, because it doesn't like the wires, see? So once it goes out on the phase conductors, the hot wires, it goes through the transformer, then it has to go back to the wind turbine. And on its way back, it flows uncontrolled over the earth, through people's homes, gets on their water pipes. Animals are sick. People are sick. Hardly anybody can live there. We had a wind farm over in Brown County, Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
The public health department, the county health department, declared it a health hazard. But then when it got far enough up the food chain to the state health department, where more politics involved, then they overrode it. But in the meantime, people can't live in their homes. People died of cancer. People are paying mortgages, two mortgages, because they built beautiful homes out there, and then the wind came along, and now they can't live in their homes, and so now they got to live in some crummy apartment or something somewhere and pay rent, plus they still got to pay for their mortgage.
Isn't it amazing that you could have this kind of technology, and they're well-meaning people wanting to do good stuff, right? But they just don't, they're just not well thought out, all the dynamics of it, like a wind turbine thing.
The IEEE, Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers, is an international organization. I mean, very, very brilliant people there. Okay? So now they know that this, they've identified this, they've written about it, and they said, here, not only is this a problem, it's an engineering problem, okay? So there's an engineering solution to engineering problems. So they said, look, if you know the frequency, like if it's a 20 kilohertz, like the inverters put 20 kilohertz back on the line, you can put a 20 kilohertz filter, tuned filter, on that line, right where it leaves the wind generator, for example, or inverter, and you can short this stuff out, and you get a good clean sine wave, and life goes on, right?
Similar to what your little filters do in the home, right?
That's exactly right. The filters is not a novel idea.
Yeah.
Okay? They've been around for years. Radio, you're in radio. Okay, if you want to listen to 104.5 megacycles out of Houston, Texas or something, for example, you might get a country music station. What did you do? You need a little inductor, and you need a capacitor, and that's all it is a tuner. And you tune it, and when you get to that frequency, that only that frequency is allowed through, right?
Yeah.
So then of course, you take the audio off the carrier wave, and then you can listen to Patrick Timpone or whatever, right? So the same thing is true with this. We create these high frequencies. If we know that it's 20 kilohertz, we just make a tuned filter for 20 kilohertz, and we short it out. But it would cost a couple extra bucks. And we're not talking, and I said a couple extra bucks. We're not talking millions of dollars. And people don't do it. And it's in the rules, the IEEE 519. But again, it's Mr. Fox and you count the chickens in my hen house.
So this whole project's up there making people sick, and they don't even want to fix it at an affordable amount of money.
Right. And it's like our filters, okay? Graham was a fellow member in the IEEE. I'm a senior member in the IEEE. I mean, so we get their publications, we read it. I mean, I went to number one electronic school in the world. He was a very famous person, you know, Graham. And so we said, look, what's the problem here? Why are people getting sick? And we're measurement experts. I'm a measurement expert. I measured it. I got an oscilloscope, so you can actually see the waveforms and say, hey, these frequencies are here. But are we sure those are the ones that are making people ill? So one way of proving in science, if you want to show that A causes B, if you can remove A and B goes away, then when you put A back, if B comes back, that's science, right? So we went to Russia. I went to Russia, many trips, okay? And I talked to the people that actually made weapons with this stuff. And I said, hey, look, when I showed them that they have the same problem on their wires, because they have computers and they have energy-efficient lighting too, they said, oh, my God, these are the most dangerous frequencies. Can you help us? Yes. So we figured a filter's not a novel idea. So we figured, okay, let's build a filter that will take out, and you tell us what frequencies we got to get rid of, Mr. Russians. And they did. And so we did, and we enjoyed 100% success when we first did it. But then, that was back in 2000 or something. But there wasn't Wi-Fi. There wasn't a cell tower on every corner around here. Not everybody had a cell phone. Very few people. The cell phones they used were great big things that sat in your dash on your truck that had to be wired in all the time. The battery went dead every, you know.
Sure, yeah.
Remember? And so we've evolved, and deck phones didn't exist. None of this existed, or at least out here, we never had it until later on. Now, we don't have 100% success. Smart meters weren't there. Things like that. So we can get rid of what's on the wires. That we can take care of. But I can't take care of what's on the ground or what's coming through space. I mean, you can do some shielding, things
sure,
like that.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, not much you can do with that stuff. You mean the cell phone towers. Yeah.
Right, yeah. You know, like, yeah, and the smart meters, you know, we got some material you can put behind the smart meter so it don't, you know, reflect
sure.
it, won't come into the house. or something. But, you know, if you stand on the other side of the meter, unless you make a total shield, and then, of course, they don't read data. Or, you know, cell towers. I mean, if they put a cell tower up, we can't stop that.
Here's an email from George. He says, I'm about to buy a new car, and they have a antenna in the car, you know, so it'll pick up the internet. Is it a danger to me if I never use that? Can Dave explain how that works?
Remember yesterday when we talked, I said your audience is the best audience.
Yeah, they're smart guys, guys and girls.
That's an excellent question. And that's an excellent question. I know the answer to it. What happens is when I bought a new truck, and not only me, but other people have bought, and clients, or they become clients, and they'll call and say, I'm going numb on my right side. And so we measure their car, because first you don't know why you're going numb on the right side. And then, but then one lady called and said, well, we went to Prairie du Chien the other day, and it's a two-hour drive, and my husband was driving, and I went numb on the left side. Well, of course, now her husband's driving, so we bring the car in, and these things are really putting a lot of RF into the car. They're bouncing all over the place because they want, so your kids can use their tablets driving down the road, and you can have your Wi-Fi and the computer and that. So the dealer sometimes will help you out, and you need to tell them that you need to turn that off. And a lot of it, like GM has OnStar, so OnStar has to turn it off. I bought a new truck, and I'd only live a 15-minute drive from my office, and I would get terrible headaches and phlegmy and stuff when I got home, but it cleared up. And then when I come to work, it wouldn't clear up until 10 o'clock, so I better get a meter and go check that. And then I found out, with talking to Professor Milam, who's a world-famous epidemiologist, that people are having strokes, and it's on the right-hand side of their brain. And guess what's sitting right up in that roof? That's where that Wi-Fi transmitter is.
Oh.
So I called and wanted it unhooked. My dealer didn't know how to do it. They have to call OnStar. And so I took the dash out and unhooked it, but then my truck wouldn't start. So then I hooked it back up, started a truck, and then unhooked it, and all my gauges went to zero. So then I had a problem. But we have a real techie guy here, okay?
Yeah.
So, and normally people will go to their dealer and call. But you have to be careful, because what happens is one time this lady, I had the meter there, and I was right at the dealer, and she, okay, it's off. Well, it wasn't off, because we had the meter, and it's still pegging it. I said, no, it's not off. Why are you lying to us? And she said, well, look, it doesn't matter. It doesn't hurt you anyway. Well, doctor, what was your name? You know, can you put that in writing that it doesn't hurt you? Because I've read thousands of documents that says it does. So then she said, okay, so she turns it off. So you got to kind of make sure, get some sort of meter to check it. But what happened, in my case, you can go on, if you have a smartphone, you can go on, download some app, and we took it up by the interstate because the smartphone works off of AT, or the truck works off AT&T, and we don't give AT&T reception here. But then you can go through and turn it off, and it's pretty clean. I don't get any readings, but I still get a report every month from this OnStar telling me I brake too many times, hard braking, and my driving, you know, and my oil isn't, you know, what my tire pressure and everything else is. So that had to be transmitted, that data, to them. So I don't know how, you know, when they do it or whatever.
So all these new cars are going through OnStar, or they?
The OnStar, GM uses OnStar, and you got to go to OnStar to get them to turn it off.
God. I wonder if you could just order a car without all this stuff on there. Say, I don't want it. Probably.
I don't want it either.
Yeah,
I
don't want any of
my privacy. I don't want them. They know where my truck is every minute of the day. I mean,
crazy.
You know, I don't want it.
Bill is in Fredericksburg, Texas. He says, please ask Dave Stetzer for his view on the use of LEDs. I'm finding non-dimmable LEDs are getting harder to find, so please ask if it matters to use the non-dimmable ones. Many filters just need a few in my parents' house and have a meter which reads good with a mix of the LEDs and incandescent bulbs. Oh, so he's got your Graham Stetzer meter, so he can measure the juice. But what's the story on LEDs?
Well, the problem with LEDs, they, well, first of all, originally it was a color problem, okay, but finally they developed them where, you know, they're getting pretty good. But then they started making the dimmable ones, and they were really bad, okay? But now there's some companies that are actually realizing this, that it creates a lot of problems, okay? And they are cleaning it up. And I don't know which companies they are. Somebody will call me and say, hey, look, I got this one or that one or whatever, you know. But the best thing to do is if you don't know, and if you have that Graham Stetzer meter, it's a little inexpensive meter, buy one, don't buy 10. Buy one and put it in a lamp, plug the meter into the outlet where the lamp is plugged in, turn the lamp on, turn it off, and see if it's any good.
Oh, so you'll be able to see if it's if it's putting up. What do you call that energy in that's measured by the little meter you have? Is it just dirty electricity, I guess? Yeah. But there's a number there. You want to get that number.
Yeah, we call it GS units, and it's not a made-up thing by just us, okay? Mm-hmm. Electrical energy is measured in watts or joules, you know, things like that. And so when we were in Russia, and they said, look, because Graham and I always use an oscilloscope, and they said, look, and they seen the waveform, they said, look, we can't afford $5,000 for every health department in our country and all over to, you know, just to get an oscilloscope, and then we got to have somebody to run it, and, you know, they're doctors and things out there, so they don't want to learn how to do this. So can you make us a meter that measures the energy that's on that wire? Well, again, we can't measure it in joules, we can't measure it in watts, so how do we measure that energy? So we measure the difference in voltage in the dV over dt, difference in time. So what it is how many times did those transients change amplitude? How many were there in like a given time, like over 1 second? So it's a unit. It's a measurement of energy. So we met in San Francisco, 2001-ish or something like that, and there was people from all over the world there. Finally, I think probably about 1:30 in the afternoon, people were hungry, hadn't eaten lunch. So one little Chinese guy got up and he said, "Hey, look." He was an engineer, a very bright guy. He said, "Look, Ohm's discovered Ohm's, so why don't we call it GS units after Graham Stetzer?" Because everybody agrees it's a measurement of energy, but it wasn't a joule or a watt or traditional. So everybody says, yeah, somebody made it in motion, they passed it, okay? So they call it GS units, but it's dV over dt.
And they actually have standards in Russia and Europe where they want to have this little meter be at least 30, right?
Well, yeah, actually what they did, the researcher says, you know, like if you get it below 30, okay?
Right, then you're good.
That's where everybody's gotten, you know, the blood sugar changes, all these things, right? But 50 is usually around about 2 kilohertz, and they already had standards where you couldn't be above 2 kilohertz. So what they did is they said, look, if that number's above 50, you have to take immediate steps in a public building, you have to take immediate steps to reduce it. And that's a national decree, and yes.
Good for them. So the LED bulbs, though, they put out blue light at night, which affects melatonin or not?
Well, that's not my expertise.
Okay.
But I'm only looking at, but originally, remember when they made the LED, they're getting better specs.
They're getting better.
Now,
yeah.
But remember originally when you had an LED, it looked like you were in a smoke-filled room.
Right. Yeah. Here's a couple more, then we'll let you go. I know. So you're going to go and visit with Dr. Klinghart this weekend and talk about this stuff. Where is that?
It's in New Jersey, Newark.
How are you doing? And you're going to leave pretty soon. Would you please ask Mr. Stetzer about using direct current for lighting? I saw a demonstration of a meter showing a regular light bulb actually flashes 120 times per minute. Is DC wiring something that can be only be done during home construction? Hate to be stuck with AC, but the wires are already in the walls.
Yeah, you can use a lot.
You can use DC, right, on the regular wires, of course.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, just so you have the right load, yeah, if you want to switch it out. A lot of people who are very sensitive to, you know, electricity, because you build up a sensitivity, really, you know, electrical hypersensitivity, I guess they call it, they'll actually have to go to DC.
So that's solar, right? Solar.
So there's a problem. Well, solar's easy, yes, if you don't have to turn it back into
AC.
Yeah.
So this person is wondering if they could just use, so you could use solar direct current and just get all direct current appliances.
Yes, people have done that. It's kind of,
it's tough.
You know, the far extreme, and it costs a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, but the people that are doing it, it's like, to them, it's a matter of life and death. I know some people, but then of course you got to get your refrigerator, you know, your appliances,
everything. Yeah.
You have to be, yeah, and it costs a lot more money for those.
Mm-hmm. But then if you have to convert it back to AC, which most people do, now they have converters, or you can modify them to get a nice clean sine wave in the conversion.
No. Yes. Can you? Yes. Yeah. But you and I can't, or I mean the average person can't.
Yeah.
It should be done by the manufacturer. Remember I said if your inverter puts 20 kilohertz back on the line, you should build an inverter for, you know, 20 kilohertz. Now, people make, oh, we have a clean sine wave, we have this and that. Well, I'm a measurement expert, and I haven't measured any. Doesn't mean they don't exist, but the ones that make those claims and the ones that, and I've measured them, that's not true.
Right. Okay.
Be sure. Okay, be sure. Don't just believe the ads.
Be sure. On the telephone, who's this?
This is Gary in Wyoming.
Gary?
Yes, I had a question for Dave. I have one of your, I have bought a package and I have one of your meters, and I did about 80% of my house with the 20. But I have, right outside my bedroom, there is two lights with dimmers on. And without the filter, it's 23 and 800. With the filter in the plug-in, it's 16 and 77. Does that mean I should just get rid of the dimmers?
Yes, exactly. See, I told you, Patrick. Who's got better listeners than you?
Yeah, we got Spock.
Yeah, no, really, seriously. That dimmer switch is going to chop that sine wave on both the positive and the negative cycle. Okay. And it does put a big high transient on that thing. Okay, so what I tell people is just get rid of the dimmers. I mean, for $2.50, you can buy a really nice Leviton 20-amp switch. So it isn't very much money to change them.
Just get them
and
out.
I tell people, look, if you want a mood, you know, light a candle.
Okay, or a salt lamp.
That's right.
Yeah, you know, right. Yeah.
Oh, okay, well, that leads me to my second question. I have three zones in the kitchen that have the dimmers on, and so I just checked them, and with the filter on, it's 33, with light off, lights on, 75, but with the, when I pull the filter off, it actually goes down. It's 31 and 43. How could that be?
It's in the kitchen, isn't it?
Yeah.
Okay, the reason is you're sharing a neutral, and it won't happen if you plug in, like, plug a power strip into the outlet.
Right,
and then plug the meter into the outlet, or into the power strip, and plug the filter into the power strip. Because what's happening is you're sharing a neutral there, and then you're just putting it between the other two.
So even though power strips aren't necessarily good, it's good in this case?
It's only, we're just using it for a test to see what's happening, okay?
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just use it for the test. Don't normally,
okay.
Yeah, then put the filter. It's going to tell you if you need it, but yeah. You're getting kind of a goofy reading, and that's because, and that's why I said it's in the kitchen. The code requires us to have multiple circuits in the kitchen. So what people do, because they want to save a buck, instead of running two number 12, two wires up to your outlet, right? They
right.
run one number 12, three up, and then they share the neutral.
Okay.
See? So then you have a red wire and a black wire. So you have two circuits there. It's just it saves $5 maybe at the most, okay? So
wow.
$5 in their again. It's $5 in their pocket.
Okay. Well, hey,
yes, very good question.
Thank you very much.
Light dimmer switches. I don't like them. I never have.
Thanks a lot. Good question. We installed Stetzer meters. Writes Lexi from the last time Dave was on your show. Oh, I heard the electrical wires of the house can still act as an antenna for frequencies of all kinds. What does Dave think about just turning off the breaker at night for sleeping?
I don't like that because, first of all, when you turn off the breaker, you're only breaking one wire. Okay?
One wire? You mean
the
from the hot wire from the panel to your, say, bedroom?
Yeah, the breaker only turns off the
hot wire.
Breaks the circuit. Yeah, the hot wire. Okay, but the ground and the neutral are still there.
Oh, that's not good.
Yes, and that ground and neutral are still connected to the earth, which there's all kinds of, and to that primary neutral that's out on the pole. And there's all kinds of stuff there. So when you put the filter in, it takes whatever's on the neutral and it puts it over to the hot. But it's 180 degrees out of phase with it. So then whatever's on the hot, it puts it over in the neutral.
Oh.
So that those they cancel each other. So what's if it's a 50 millivolt transient going in the positive direction, right, and we shove it over to the negative, what's plus 50 and minus 50 equal? Zero, you see? Now, if you just turn the breaker off, you still then the filter doesn't work because the filter goes between the hot and the neutral.
Jeez.
See, so there's nothing to short it to, see? So, no, just... and.
Just don't do it. Just put the filters in and
right.
be done with it.
And what's happening is these high frequencies, okay, between the 2 kilohertz and the 100 kilohertz are the most biologically active frequencies. And if you look at the research, okay, the 60 cycle, and I think the utilities kind of get beat up. They deserve to have black eye now and then because of the things they pull, but but they don't need to get beat up totally.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I think they get a bad deal. But the 60 cycle... I've read thousands of documents, and where the 60 cycle, most of the research coming back on the 60 cycle says it's inconclusive. And sometimes they say, well, okay, it's, but if you, when I was in Russia, I said, did you guys save the waveforms? Because the where it was really dirty power, if you want to call it, a lot of high frequencies riding on the 50 or 60 cycle, people were ill. And when there was a clean 60 cycle, people weren't. So I think that's the difference. And that's my opinion, okay? So if you have the filters in, you're going to have a clean 60-cycle waveform there, and it doesn't like to go internal, and that frequency field will drop off in really fast, like inches, okay? Where the high frequencies don't drop off. They go way out into the room.
So don't... See, I've been telling people turn off the breaker in the room, so I should quit telling them to do that. Don't do that.
No, I don't. Where I've seen it, you know, where we put the filters in, it doesn't make any difference. People get better.
Yeah.
But if they turn the breakers off, sometimes I just come back from Canada. A guy was turning the breakers off. He bought some expensive switches, that demand switches and that, and it turned it off, but he still couldn't sleep.
No.
He had to move out of the house.
Well,
when I measured what was on the wire and showed it to him, all this crap's on there. But if you put the filters in, the crap's off.
See, there you go. I've had my bedroom breaker off for years. I'm going to turn it back on today.
Well, just see how you feel.
I'm going to probably be able to leap tall buildings in a single bound when I do that.
If you got a filter in there and you got good clean power, I don't think it bothers you.
I'll be done. Yeah, I got filters, boy. I need to replace
I'm sitting in front of two computers right now.
Yeah.
In an office, and we have probably 20 or more computers in this building, and we have filters in, and everybody's healthy here.
And what's your reading if you just plug in your little meter?
I think it's around 23.
23. Yeah, mine's real low here in the studio, and just with a couple of filters, and you can see all the stuff I got plugged in. Huh.
Yeah.
Pretty cool.
You're in the same boat, yeah.
Yeah. I need to replace my roof, or it's Steve, so I'm considering installing a grid-tied solar PVC electrical system with perhaps a small separate solar PV battery storage dedicated for the fridge. Can you please discuss any dirty electricity concerns with PV equipment? Including the choice between maybe a large DC or AC inverter, micro inverters on each panel. We talked about it a bit.
Yes, but I personally wouldn't do it. But
because
it's going to be a lot of money, and I think you're going to be sorry. But
why do you say that?
There may be an inverter company that really does, but I think I'd want a measurement first with an oscilloscope. Now, if he wants to call me, I'm going to be gone today, but next week or something, if this your listener wants to call me, he certainly can, and I'll explain it. And I'll actually email him some, send him some information that was put out by the Institute of Electrical and Electronic Engineers.
So, if you were going to do solar, if you could get a good inverter, is that what I hear you saying, that would really do a for real sine wave from DC to AC? It's cool.
I'm not anti-solar,
okay,
and I'm not anti-wind. And solar, I have no problems with that. but I have never seen a good inverter.
Uh-huh. Now,
can they exist? The answer is yes. I read a paper by Solectra, I think it's a solar company, and they said, here, look, this is how you got to clean up the waveform. And they did the research, and they said, here's what the crap that's going back on the line is. And it's the exact waveforms that I collect from every solar inverter that I've been. Then he said, okay, let's put this filter on here. And if you add this filter, this is what the sine wave looks like. And it's a scientific paper, and the sine wave is clear. But nobody does it. So is technology available to make this stuff, you know, safe? Yes.
If you had panels on the roof and a really good, say, a for real AC DC converter, like you said, a real one, and you put your Stetzer meter into the wall somewhere, what would you read?
The ambient, whatever's there. You wouldn't get anything from the solar.
But I mean, so you'd get a really very low number, like 10 or something like that, huh?
Well, you wouldn't get anything if that's all you had was just a solar. In other words, you plugged into the inverter and you didn't go back on the line, because when you plug it in, you're going to get something from, you know, the grid or something, the grid tie. But if you're only going to measure just the solar, you know, after the AC, and if it's really clean, it would read very little, if anything.
But if you were totally separated from the grid, no line, you wouldn't get hardly anything. It'd be quiet as a mouse, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. See, that's what we should do when we grow up, do that.
Yeah.
But it's expensive.
Younger, I'd probably make tuned filters for inverters and stuff.
Well, younger, what do you mean? You're just a young kid. Where are you going to go? You're not going to leave us or anything. Yeah. Well, Dave, it's always fun to talk to you. I know you got to go and catch a plane, and it should be great. Who are some of the other people? Do you know Klinghart's little gathering? Do you know?
I think Dr. Mercola is going to be there.
Cool. All right. Yeah.
I know for sure. And I don't know who else was there. I didn't really read the thing. I'm kind of a procrastinator, and I'll read it, you know, like
on the airplane. Yeah. Well, Dr. Klinghart's a cool guy. Please tell him we said hi. He's been on the show a few times, and he's really a good man. He's a good. So
and he cares about people.
Oh, he really does. Yeah, he really does. So I bet you'll thrill him with some of this electrical stuff at that conference, boy.
Oh, yeah, I've been him before. You know, I've been, I think I was in Florida with him at a conference that he had down there.
Mm-hmm. So cool.
He has these things.
Cool. Well, say hi to all the cows up in Wisconsin, you cheeseheads.
Thanks. Again, it's been a pleasure, and I really enjoy your audience there.
Oh, thanks a lot.
I usually get follow-up calls or something, and they're really... really, they're in a class by themselves.
Well, we got some smart cookies around here.
You do. You got them listening to you.
All right, Dave. Well, we love you. Thanks.
Yep, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Yep, bye.
Dave Stetzer. Yeah, he's the real deal, folks. And he talks to people. Now, he's going to Klinghart's thing this weekend, or now he's got to leave for the airplane for a few minutes. So don't call him now. But, you know, call him on Monday or Tuesday and just go to StetzerElectric.com. And he's got these little filters. They're very inexpensive. And you can plug them in your home and get these numbers down, or this dirty electricity down to a reasonable level, which the Ruskies say about 30 is where you want to be, and it's safe. And what you can do is buy one of these meters and then kind of help your neighbors and your family and all that. So you only need to buy one meter, because once you measure your home and get the filters in the right spot, you're done, and then you don't need it, and you can just let other people use it. I think they're like $100 or something. So Stetzer's got them all. So there's, you know, we have a lot of tools, and people like Dave Stetzer, it's really terrific to have him around. We can talk to him and have fun. Okay, kids, well, I love you. Thanks for your ongoing support. I don't say it often, and I need to, because I will today. We have a gaggle of people. Not a lot. I mean, well, I don't even want to use a term. It's just some people. I'll just leave it at that. That send us 10 or 20 bucks a month, and they have for years. And every month I always email them and thank them. And I just want to thank you folks that do that, because it's really cool. It's more important than the dollars to know that you care. Just to say, well, I'll send Patrick 10 bucks and all that, because we just... the way we make a living is just promoting these products, and sometimes sales are, you know, real hot. Sometimes they cool off. You know, things are cycles. So that little bit we, I don't even want to use the term little bit, the amount that we get. See, we're always trying to gauge things, right? The money that we get through the donations on a regular basis is really cool. And I love you guys for doing that. And even if you don't do that, I love you too. Okay, I love everybody. I love everybody. I'll see you.
From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.